Bible of the Zorlarans. All of them, even the two dwarves, breathed a sigh of relief when they came out of the tunnels into the open air of the crags.
"The road ain't far,"
Brunner explained, pointing to the east.
"She'll get us to port last, and from there on to Long Saddle."
"Or Puent,"
Regis agreed, and the dwarf nodded. The three humans they had rescued cheered at that thought, but Drizzt and Ambergris both turned to Brother Afafrenfir, for the monk had been hinting that he would not follow their road.
"Well, speak it clear, then,"
Ambergris bade him.
"It is time for me to go home," Afafrenfir admitted. "To face my brethren, in the hopes that they will forgive me."
"Was years ago when ye went with Parbid to the Shadowfell," Ambergris said. "Think they'll even remember ye."
The monk smiled.
"Not that long," he said,
and Ambergris laughed, and nodded as she looked at Drizzt. The drow knew her story, of how she had been sent to the Shadowfell as an agent of Citadel Adbar, as repentance for some indiscretions. Knowing how Amber Grisolo Maul had walked the gray areas of morality herself, Drizzt was not surprised when she reached up and patted her friend on the shoulder and declared,
"I'm going with ye."
Brother Afafrenfir's face brightened immediately, but he shook his head and tried to insist that he could not ask that of her, that it was too far a journey and through dangerous lands.
"Bah! But who's to speak for ye if not meself, who knows ye better than any?"
the dwarf said. Afafrenfir stared at her for a moment, then laughed in surrender.
"I am not so sure that your presence will bolster my case," he said in a light-hearted tone,
"but I welcome it."
"The Monastery of the Yellow Rose?" Drizzt asked.
"Aye," said the monk, "in faraway Damara, in the Bloodstone Lands."
Regis's ears picked up.
"Come with us to the road and turn south then," he said to the monk. "Then turn south through Neverwinter and follow the tradeway to the Borskir Bridge, and inquire of Dorogardo and the Grinning Ponies all along your way. When you find them, tell them you are a friend of mine, of the halfling called Spider. They will see you to Suzail, where you can catch passage to Impeltor."
The halfling nodded as he finished, his thoughts spinning back to the far banks of a great sea of fallen stars. To Aglarond, to Denala Topolino, and a life he had known, and one whose echoes tapped profoundly at his heavy heart. When they got to the main road, and Afafrenfir and Ambergris turned to the south, it was all Regis could manage not to go with them. He had a duty here, he reminded himself repeatedly. To Puent, trapped in Wolfgar's broken horn, and to Brunner, determined to return to Mithril Hall. But he would return to the city of Delthuntil and to his beloved Denala, Regis silently vowed, as he watched the monk and the dwarf walk away to the south, his other companions moving north for Port Last, and with Long Saddle waiting beyond that. They crept back into the complex they had declared as their home to witness the carnage and the defilement of their chapel. For Berelip Zorlaran, the shock was complete. The webs had unfolded, and the captive Dahlia was gone, and the room prepared for her mother, Matron Xerath, was buried now under tons of rock. She did not dare set the remaining goblin slaves to dig out that rubble, for fear that it would lead to more instability. The images in the forge were no less troubling, beginning with and centering around the broken form of the great Drider. The captive human was gone, even the dead monk had been removed, and those slaves they had not had the time to drag away had also been freed. The priestess cursed herself for not sending an assassin down into that remaining mining section, particularly when she remembered that a dwarf cleric had been among the few down there. And the dead in the forge, many, many dead, were all Zorlaran allies, scores of goblins, a quartet of driders, and more than a dozen Zorlaran drow, with not a single enemy among them. By all accounts, the invaders had gone, and the apostate Doerden had gone, and the complex was back in Berelip's hands. But her mother would not be pleased. According to Berelip's scouts,
Matron Xerath was only a day or two away, marching with the rest of the house and a sizable force from Menzo Baranzon that would lead the way to Desabarak's location in the east. The only good news the priestess received came from the north, where Ravel, Sarabel, and Tiago Bayenri approached, so said her scouts. But even in this there were whispers of trouble, rumors about many drow dead, many Zorlaren dead, and even whispers that weapons master Jarth was not among the returning band. It was all too much for Berylip, and she went to her private chambers and tumbled down upon a pile of large pillows, seeking respite. She lay on her back, staring up at the webbing canopy of her bed, noting the designs and the intricate strands and letting them take her thoughts back to the chapel. What might she do to make the place more presentable to Matron Xerath, to mitigate the rage she knew would be directed her way? No, not her way, she decided, for she would blame Ravel for all of this. It would be a tricky proposition, she realized, for by doing so, she would also be implicating Tiago Bayenri, and it was never a good thing to speak ill of a Bayenri. She would reveal Ravel's spying on Gronth, yes. This tragedy fell squarely on his shoulders. Ravel had found the apostate, so he had believed, and Ravel had taken the soldiers, leaving Q'Zorlaren vulnerable above Berylip's protests. The priestess nodded as her plan unfolded in her thoughts. She would have to take care to absolve Tiago. If she did it correctly, she might even find Tiago on her side in this conflict, as he too tried to deflect blame onto others. They would all try to deflect blame. That was the way of the drow, after all. Berylip knew that she had to do so not only with her mother, but with the Archmage, surely. Gronth had taken a particular interest in this Dahlia creature, and now she was gone. With that thought in mind, Berylip pictured the Darthir in the webbing, only in the strands of her own canopy. Perhaps she could find a replacement among the slaves they had brought back, she thought. Was Gronth done with Dahlia? Were they all? If so, another body up there might suffice, for how would they know the truth of the newer sacrifice? The image above her became clearer and nearer, and Berylip blinked as she realized that it was not an image in her mind's eye, but an actual person up there. For a heartbeat, she thought of Dahlia, and wondered if a handmaiden of Loth had somehow saved the prisoner and hung her here for Berylip to find. But it was not Dahlia, she realized, as that form broke through the webbing and dropped upon her, as she recognized it as a man and human, and one she knew. Yes, Artemis and Treri made sure that Berylip saw his face and looked into his eyes as he deftly kicked it.